"What's happening, Corporal?" The captain of the guards strolled out of a door in the archway and walked over to the witches. "These ladies want to come in, sir," said the corporal.
"Well?"
"They're a bit, you know, not 100% clean," said the corporal, wilting under Granny's stare, "and one of them's got messy hair." "Well," snapped Magrat. "And one of them looks like she uses bad language."
"What?"
said Nanny, her grin evaporating. "I'll tan your eye, you little bugger."
"But, Corporal, they have got brooms," said the captain. "It's very hard for cleaning staff to look so tidy all the time."
"Cleaning staff?" said Granny.
"I'm sure they're as anxious as you are to get tidied up," said the captain.
"Excuse me," said Granny, empowering the words with much the same undertones as are carried by words like charge and kill. "Excuse me, but does this pointy hat I'm wearing mean anything to you?"
The soldiers looked at it politely.
"Can you give me a clue?"
said the captain eventually.
"It means..."
"We'll just trot along in if it's all the same to you," said Nanny Og. "Got a lot of cleaning up to do." She flourished her broomstick. "Come, ladies." She and Magrat grasped Granny's elbows firmly and propelled her under the archway before her fuse burned out. Granny Weatherwax always held that you ought to count up to 10 before losing your temper. No one knew why, because the only effect of this was to build up the pressure and make the ensuing explosion a whole lot worse. The witches didn't stop until they were out of sight of the gate.
"Now, Esme," said Annie soothingly, "you shouldn't take it personal, and we are a bit mucky, you must admit. They were just doing their job, all right. How about that?"
"They treated us as if we were ordinary people," said Granny in a shocked voice.
"This is foreign parts, Granny," said Magrat. "Anyway, you said the men on the boat didn't recognise the hat either."
"But then I didn't want them to," said Granny. "That's different."
"It's just an incident, Granny," said Magrat. "They were just stupid soldiers. They don't even know a proper free-form hairstyle when they see it."
Nanny looked around. Crowds milled past them almost in silence.
"And you must admit it's a nice, clean city," she said.
They took stock of their surroundings. It was certainly the cleanest place they'd ever seen. Even the cobblestones had a polished look.
"You could eat your tea off the street," said Nanny as they strolled along.
"Yes, but you'd eat your tea off the street anyway," said Granny.
"I wouldn't eat all of it. Even the gutters are scrubbed. Not a Ronald in sight, Luke."
Ronald III of Lancre, believed to be an extremely unpleasant monarch, was remembered by posterity only in this obscure bit of rhyming slang.
"Giffa?"
"Well, you said that in Ankh-Morpork."
"This is somewhere else."
"It's so spotless," said Magrat. "Makes you wish you'd cleaned your sandals."
"Yeah," Nanny Og squinted along the street. "Makes you wish you were a better person, really."
"Why are you two whispering?"
She followed their gaze. There was a guard standing on the street corner. When he saw them looking at him, he touched his helmet and gave them a brief smile.
"Even the guards are polite," said Magrat.
"And there's so many of them, too," said Granny.
"Amazing, really, needing all these guards in a city where people are so clean and quiet," said Magrat.
"Perhaps there's so much niceness to be spread around, they need a lot of people to do it," said Nanny Og.
The witches wandered through the packed streets.
"Nice houses, though," said Magrat. "Very decorative and oldie-worldy."
Granny Weatherwax, who lived in a cottage that was as oldie-worldy as it was possible to be without being a lump of metamorphic rock, made no comment. Nanny Og's feet started to complain.
"We ought to find somewhere to stop the night," she said. "We can look for this girl in the morning. We'll do a lot better for a good night's sleep."
"And a bath," said Magrat, "with soothing herbs."
"Good idea. I could just go a bath too," said Nanny.
"My word, doesn't autumn roll around quickly," said Granny sourly.
"Yeah? When did you last have a bath, Esme?"
"What do you mean, last?"
"See? Then there's no call to make comments about my ablutions."
"Baths is unhygienic," Granny declared. "You know I've never agreed with baths, sitting around in your own dirt like that."
"What do you do, then?" said Magrat.
"I just washes," said Granny. "All the bits, you know, as and when they becomes available."
However available they were, and no further information was vouchsafed on this point,
They were certainly more available than accommodation in Genua in fat lunchtime. All the taverns and inns were more than full. Gradually, the press of crowds pushed them out of the main streets and into the less fashionable quarters of the city. But still, there was no room for the three of them. Granny Weatherwax had had enough.
"The very next place we see," she said, setting her jaw firmly, "we're going in. What's that inn over there?"
Nanny Ogg peered at the sign. "Hotel, no vacancies," she muttered, and then brightened up. "Hotel, no vacancies," she repeated. "That means new, cancies in foreign," she added helpfully.
"It'll do," said Granny.
She pushed the door open. A round, red-faced man looked up from the desk. He was new to the job and very nervous. The last incumbent had disappeared for not being round and red-faced enough. Granny didn't waste time.
"You see this hat?" she demanded. "You see this broom?"
The man looked from her to the broom and back again.
"Yes," he said. "What's that mean?"
"It means we want three rooms for the night," said Granny, looking smugly at the other two.
"With sausage," said Nanny.
And one vegetarian meal," said Magrat.
The man looked at all three of them. Then he went over to the door.
"You see this door? You see this sign?" he said.
"We don't bother about signs," said Granny.
"Well then," said the man, "I give up. What's the pointy hat and a broom really mean?"
"It means I'm a witch," said Granny.
The man put his head on one side.
"Yeah," he said. Is that another word for daft old woman?"
"Dear Jason and everyone," wrote Nanny Ogg, "do you know, they don't know about witches here. That's how backward they are in foreign parts. A man gave Esme some cheek, and she would have lost her temper, so me and Magrat and I got hold of her and rushed her out, because if you make someone think they've been turned into something, there's always trouble. You remember what happened last time, when afterwards you had to go and dig a pond for Mr. Wilkins to live in?"
They had managed to find a table to themselves in a tavern. It was packed with people of all species. The noise was at shouting level and smoke wreathed the air.
"Will you stop that scribbling, Githa Og? It gets on my nerves," snapped Granny.
"They must have witches here," said Magrat. "Everywhere has witches. You've got to have witches abroad. You find witches everywhere."
"Like cockroaches," said Nanny Og cheerfully. "You should have let me make him believe he was a frog," muttered Granny.
"You can't do that, Esme. You can't go around making people believe their things just because they've been cheeky and don't know who you are," said Githa. "Otherwise we'd be up to our ear in people up and about."
Despite many threats, Granny Weatherwax had never turned anyone into a frog. The way she saw it, there was a technically less cruel but cheaper and much more satisfying thing you could do. You could leave them human and make them think they were a frog, which also provided much innocent entertainment for passers-by.
"I always felt sorry for Mr. Wilkins," said Magrat, staring moodily at the tabletop. "It was so sad watching him try to catch flies on his tongue."
"He shouldn't have said what he said," said Granny.
"What, you were a domineering old busybody?" said Nanny innocently.
"I don't mind criticism," said Granny. "You know me. I've never been one to take offence at criticism. No one could say I'm the sort to take offence at criticism."
"Not twice, anyway," said Nanny, "not without blowing bubbles."
"It's just that I can't stand unfairness," said Granny, "and you stop that grinning, anyway. I don't see why you're making a fuss about it. He wore off after a couple of days."
"Mrs. Wilkins says he still goes out swimming a lot," said Magrat. "It's given him a whole new interest," she said. "Perhaps they have a different kind of witch in the city," said Magrat hopelessly. "Perhaps they wear different sort of clothes."
"There's only one kind of witch," said Granny, "and we're it."
She looked around the room. Of course, she thought, if someone was keeping witches out, people wouldn't know about them. Someone who didn't want anyone else meddling here. But she let us in.
"Oh, well, at least we're in the dry," said Nanny.
A drinker, standing in a crowd behind her, threw back his head to laugh and spilled beer down her back. She muttered something under her breath. Magrat saw the man look down to take another swig and stare wide-eyed into the mug. And then he dropped it and fought his way out of the room, clutching at his throat.
"What did you do to his drink?" she said. "You ain't old enough to be told," said Nanny.
At home,
If a witch wanted a table to herself, it just happened. The sight of the pointy hat was enough. People kept a polite distance, occasionally sending free drinks to her. Even Magrat got respect. Not particularly because anyone was in awe of her, but because a slight to one witch was a slight to all witches, and no one wanted Granny Weatherwax coming around to explain this to them. Here, they were being jostled, as if they were ordinary. Only Nanny Ogg's warning hand on Granny Weatherwax's arm was keeping a dozen jovial drinkers from unnatural amphibianhood. And even Nanny's usually very elastic temper was beginning to twang. She always prided herself on being as ordinary as muck, but there was ordinary, and there was ordinary. It was like being that prince, what's his name, in the nursery story, who liked to wander around his kingdom dressed up as a commoner. She'd always had a shrewd suspicion that the little pervert made sure people knew who he was beforehand, just in case anyone tried to get too common. It was like getting muddy. Getting muddy when you had a nice hot tub to look forward to was fun. Getting muddy when all you had to look forward to was more mud was no fun at all. She reached a conclusion. "Hey, why don't we have a drink?" said Nanny Ogg brightly. "We'd all feel better for a drink." "Oh, no," said Granny. "You caught me with that herbal drink last time. I'm sure there was alcohol in that. I definitely felt a bit woozy after the sixth glass. I ain't drinking any more foreign muck."
"You've got to drink something," said Magrat soothingly. "I'm thirsty anyway."
She looked vaguely at the crowded bar. "Perhaps they do some kind of fruit cup or something."
"Bound to," said Nanny Ogg.
She stood up, glanced at the bar, and surreptitiously removed a hatpin from her hat.
"Shan't be a moment."
The two of them were left in their own private gloom. Granny sat staring fixedly in front of her.
"You really shouldn't take it so bad just because people aren't showing you any respect," said Magrat, pouring soothing oil on the internal fires. "They've hardly ever shown me any respect at all. It's not a problem."
"If you ain't got respect, you ain't got a thing," said Granny distantly.
"Oh, I don't know. I've always managed to get along," said Magrat.
"That's 'cause you're a wet hen, Magrat Garlic," said Granny.
There was a short, hot silence, ringing with the words that shouldn't have escaped, and a few grunts of pained surprise from the direction of the bar.
"I know she's always thought that," Magrat told herself within the glowing walls of her embarrassment. "I just never thought she'd ever say it. And she'll never say sorry, because that's not the kind of thing she does. She just expects people to forget things like that. I was just trying to be friends again. If she ever really has any friends."
"Here we are, then," said Nanny Ogg, emerging from the crush with a tray. "Fruit drinks." She sat down and looked from one to the other. "Made from bananas," she said, in the hope of striking a spark of interest from either woman. "I remember our Shane brought a banana home once. My, we had a good laugh about that. I said to the man, 'What kind of fruit drinks do people drink around here?' And this is what he gave me, made from bananas. A banana drink. You like it? It's what everyone drinks here. It's got bananas in it."
"It's certainly very strongly flavoured," said Magrat, sipping hers cautiously. "Has it got sugar in it, too?"
"Very likely," said Nanny. She looked at Granny's middle-distance frown for a moment, and then picked up her pencil and licked the end professionally.
"Anyway, one good thing is the drink here is very cheap. There's this one called a banana-nana daiquiri, which is basically rum with a banana-nana-nana in it."
Nanny Ogg knew how to start spelling banana, but didn't know how you stopped.
"I can feel it doing me good. It is ve damp here. I hope we find somewhere to stay tonight. I expect we shall, because Esme always falls on her feet, or at any rate on someone's feet. I have drawn a picture of a banana-nana-nana daiquiri. You can see it is empty right down to the bottom. Love, Mum, XXXX.
In the end, they found a stable. It was, as Nanny Ogg cheerfully commented, probably warmer and more hygienic than any of the inns, and there were millions of people in foreign parts who'd give their right arms for such a comfy, dry place to sleep. This cut about as much ice as a soap hacksaw. It doesn't take much to make witches fall out. Magrat lay awake, using her sack of clothes as a pillow, and listening to the warm, soft rain on the roof. It's all gone wrong before we've even started, she thought. I don't know why I let them come with me. I'm perfectly capable of doing something by myself for once, but they always treat me as if I was a wet hen. I don't see why I should have to put up with her sulking and snapping at me the whole time. What's so special about her, anyway? She hardly ever does anything really magical, whatever Nanny says. She really does just shout a lot and bully people, and as for Nanny, she means well, but she has no sense of responsibility. I thought I'd die when she started singing the hedgehog song in the inn. I just hope to goodness the people didn't know what the words meant. I'm the fairy godmother around here. We're not at home now. There's got to be different ways of doing things in foreign parts. She got up at first light. The other two were asleep, although asleep was too moderate a word for the sounds Granny Weatherwax was making. Magrat put on her best dress, the green silk one that was unfortunately now a mass of creases. She took out a bundle of tissue paper and slowly unwrapped her occult jewellery. Magrat bought occult jewellery as a sort of distraction from being Magrat. She had three large boxes of the stuff and was still exactly the same person. She did her best to remove the straw from her hair, then she unpacked the magic wand. She wished she had a mirror to inspect herself in. "I've got the wand," she said quietly. "I don't see why I need any help. Desiderata said I was to tell them not to help." It crossed her mind to reflect that Desiderata had been very lax on that point. The one thing you could be sure of, if you told Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Ogg not to help, was that they would rush to help, if only out of spite. It was quite surprising to Magrat that anyone as clever as Desiderata should have slipped up on that minor point. She'd probably got a psycholology too, whatever that was. Moving quietly so as not to wake the other two, she opened the door and stepped lightly into the damp air. Wand at the ready, she was prepared to give the world whatever it wished for. It would help if this included pumpkins. Nanny Ogg opened one eye as the door creaked shut. She sat up and yawned and scratched herself. She fumbled in her hat and retrieved her pipe. She nudged Granny Weatherwax in the ribs. "I ain't asleep," said Granny.
"Mugrat's gone off somewhere."
"Hmm.
And I'm going out to get something to eat," muttered Nanny.
There was no talking to Esme when she was in that kind of mood. As she stepped out, Grebo dropped lightly off a beam and landed on her shoulder. Nanny Ogg, one of life's great optimists, stepped out to take whatever the future had to offer, preferably with rum and bananas in it. The house wasn't hard to find. Desiderata had made very exact notes. Magrat's gaze took in the high white walls and ornate metal balconies. She tried to straighten a few wrinkles in her dress, tugged some recalcitrant bits of hay from her hair, and then marched up the driveway and knocked on the door. The knocker broke off in her hand. Looking around anxiously, lest someone should have noted this vandalism, Magrat tried to wedge it back. It fell off, knocking a lump out of the marble step. Finally, she knocked gently with her knuckle. A fine cloud of paint dust lifted off the door and floated down to the ground. That was the only effect. Magrat considered her next move. She was pretty sure that fairy godmothers weren't supposed to leave a little card pushed under the door saying something like, "Called today, but you were out. Please contact the depot for a further appointment." Anyway, this wasn't the kind of house that got left empty. There would be a score of servants infesting a place like this. She crunched over the gravel and peered around the side of the house. Maybe the back door. Witches were generally more at home around back doors. Nanny Ogg always was. She was heading for the one belonging to the palace. It was easy enough to get into. This wasn't a castle like the ones back home, which expressed very clear ideas about inside and outside and were built to keep the two separate. This was, well, a fairy tale castle. All icing sugar battlements and tiny towering turrets. Anyway, no one took much notice of little old ladies. Little old ladies were by definition harmless. Although in a string of villages across several thousand miles of continent, this definitely was currently being updated. Castles, in Nanny Ogg's experience, were like swans. They looked as if they were drifting regally through the waters of time, but in fact there was a hell of a lot of activity going on underneath. There'd be a maze of pantries and kitchens and laundries and stables and breweries. She liked the idea of breweries. And people never noticed another old biddy around the place, eating any spare grub that was lying around. Besides, you got gossip. Nanny Ogg liked gossip, too. Granny Weatherwax wandered disconsolately along the clean streets. She wasn't looking for the other two, she was quite certain of that.
Of course, she might just happen to bump into them, sort of accidentally, and give them a meaningful look, but she certainly wasn't looking for them. There was a crowd at the end of the street. Working on the reasonable assumption that Nanny Og might be in the middle of it, Granny Weatherwax drifted over. Nanny wasn't there, but there was a raised platform and a small man in chains and some bright uniformed guards. One of them was holding an axe. You did not have to be a great world traveller to understand that the purpose of this tableau was not to give the chained man a signed testimonial and a collection from everyone at the office. Granny nudged a bystander. "What's happening?" The man looked sideways at her.
"The guards have caught him thieving," he said.
"Eh, well, he looks guilty enough," said Granny. People in chains had a tendency to look guilty. "So what are they going to do to him?"
"Teach him a lesson."
"How do they do that, then?"
"See the axe?"
Granny's eyes hadn't left it the whole time, but now she let her attention rove over the crowd, picking up scraps of thought. An ant has an easy mind to read. There's just one stream of big, simple thoughts. Carry, carry, bite. Get into the sandwiches. Carry, eat. Something like a dog is more complicated. A dog can be thinking several thoughts at the same time, but a human mind is a great sullen, lightning-filled cloud of thoughts, all of them occupying a finite amount of brain processing time. Finding whatever the owner thinks they're thinking in the middle of the smog of prejudices, memories, worries, hopes and fears is almost impossible. But enough people thinking much the same thing can be heard, and Granny Weatherwax was aware of the fear.
"Looks like it'll be a lesson he won't forget in a hurry," she murmured.
"I reckon he'll forget it quite quickly," said the watcher, and then shuffled away from Granny in the same way that people move away from lightning rods during a thunderstorm.
At this point, Granny picked up the discordant note in the orchestra of thought. In the middle of it were two minds that were not human. Their shape was as simple, clean and purposeful as a naked blade. She'd felt minds like that before and had never cherished the experience. She scanned the crowd and found the mind's owners. They were staring unblinkingly at the figures on the platform. The watchers were women, or at least currently the same shape as women. Taller than she was, slender as sticks, and wearing broader hats with veils that covered their faces. Their dresses shimmered in the sunlight. Possibly blue, possibly yellow, possibly green. Possibly patterned. It was impossible to tell. The merest movement changed the colours. She couldn't make out their faces. There were witches in Genua, all right. One witch, anyway. A sound from the platform made her turn, and she knew why people in Genua were quiet and nice. There were countries in foreign parts, Granny had heard, where they chopped off the hands of thieves so they wouldn't steal again, and she'd never been happy with that idea. They didn't do that in Genua. They cut their heads off so they wouldn't think of stealing again. Granny knew exactly where the witches were in Genua now. They were in charge. Magrat reached the house's back door. It was ajar. She pulled herself together again. She knocked in a polite, diffident sort of way. She said. A bowl full of dirty water hit her full in the face. Through the tidal roaring of a pair of ears full of suds, she heard a voice say, "Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. I didn't know anyone was standing there." Magrat wiped the water out of her eyes and tried to focus on a dim figure in front of her. A kind of narrative certainty rose in her mind.
"Is your name Ella?" she said.
"That's right. Who are you?"
Magrat looked at her newfound goddaughter up and down. She was the most attractive young woman Magrat had ever seen. Skin as brown as a nut, hair so blonde as to be almost white. A combination not totally unusual in such an easy-going city as Genua had once been. "What were you supposed to say at a time like this?" She removed a piece of potato peel from her nose.
"I'm your fairy godmother," she said. "Funny thing, it sounds silly now I come to tell someone."
Ella peered at her.
"You?
Yes, I've got the wand and everything."
Magrat waggled the wand in case this helped. It didn't. Ella put her head on one side.
"I thought you people were supposed to appear in a shower of glittering little lights and a twinkly noise," she said suspiciously.
"Look, you just get the wand," said Magrat desperately. "You don't get a whole book of instructions."
Ella gave her another searching look. Then she said,
"Suppose you'd better come in then. You're just in time. I was making a cup of tea, anyway."
The iridescent women got into an open-topped carriage. Beautiful as they were, Granny noted, they walked awkwardly. Well, they would. They wouldn't be used to legs. She also noticed the way people didn't look at the carriage.
It wasn't that they didn't see it. It was simply that they wouldn't let their gaze dwell on it, as if merely recognising it would lead them into trouble. And she noticed the coach horses. They had better senses than the humans did. They knew what was behind them, and they didn't like it at all. She followed them as they trotted flat-eared and wild-eyed through the streets. Eventually they were driven into a driveway of a big, dilapidated house near the palace. Granny lurked by the wall and noted the details. Plaster was dropping off the house walls, and even the knocker had fallen off the door. Granny Weatherwax did not believe in atmospheres. She did not believe in psychic auras. Being a witch, she'd always thought, depended more on what you didn't believe. But she was prepared to believe that there was something very unpleasant in that house. Not evil. The two not-exactly women weren't evil, in the same way that a dagger or a sheer cliff isn't evil. Being evil means being able to make choices. But the hand wielding a dagger or pushing a body over a cliff could be evil. And something like that was going on. She really wished that she didn't know who was behind it. People like Nanny Ogg turn up everywhere. It's as if there's some special morphic generator dedicated to the production of old women who like a laugh and aren't averse to the odd pint, especially if some drink normally sold in very small glasses. You find them all over the place, often in pairs. Always in front of you in any queue, for a start. They tend to attract one another. Possibly they broadcast inaudible signals indicating that here is someone who could be persuaded to go, ooh, at pictures of other people's grandchildren. Nanny Ogg had found a friend. Her name was Mrs. Pleasant. She was a cook, and she was the first black person Nanny had ever spoken to. Racism was not a problem on the Discworld, because, what with trolls and dwarfs and so on, speciesism was much more interesting. Black and white lived in perfect harmony and ganged up on green. She was also a cook, and of that very superior type who spends most of the time holding court in a chair in the centre of the kitchen, apparently taking very little heed of the activity going on around her. Occasionally she'd give an order, and they'd only need to be occasionally, because she'd seen to it over the years that people either did things her way, or not at all. Once or twice, with some ceremony, she'd get up, taste something, and maybe add a pinch of salt. Such people are always ready to chat to any wandering peddlers, herbalists, or little old women with cats on their shoulders. Grebo rode on Nanny's shoulder as though he'd just eaten the parrot. "You be a-comin' here for fat lunchtime, then?" said Mrs. Pleasant. "Helping a friend with a bit of business," said Nanny. "My, these biscuits are tasty." "I means I see by your eye," said Mrs. Pleasant, pushing the plate nearer to her, "that you are of a magical persuasion."
"Then you sees a lot further than most people in these parts," said Nanny. "You know what'd improve these biscuits no end? It'd be something to dip 'em in. What do you think?"
"How about something with bananas in it?"
"Bananas would be just the thing," said Nanny happily. Mrs. Pleasant waved imperiously at one of the maids who set to work. Nanny sat on her chair, swinging her stumpy legs and looking around the kitchen with interest. A score of cooks were working with the single-mindedness of an artillery platoon laying down a barrage. Huge cakes were being constructed. In the fireplaces, whole carcasses of animals were being roasted. Turnspit dogs galloped in their treadmills. A huge man with a bald head and a scar right across his face was patiently inserting little sticks into sausages. Nanny hadn't had any breakfast. Grebo had had some breakfast, but this didn't make any difference. They were both undergoing a sort of exquisite culinary torture. They both turned as if hypnotised to watch two maids stagger under a tray of canapés.
"I can see you is a very observant woman, Mrs. Ogg," said Mrs. Pleasant.
"Just a slice," said Nanny, without thinking.
"I also determines," Mrs. Pleasant said after a while, "that you have a cat of no usual breed upon your shoulder there."
"You're right there."
"I knows I'm right."
A brimming glass of yellow foam was slid in front of Nanny. She looked at it reflectively and tried to get back to the matter in hand.
"So," she said, "where would I go, do you think, to find out about how you do magic in—"
"Would you like something to eat?" said Mrs. Pleasant.
"What? Oh, my word!"
Mrs. Pleasant rolled her eyes.
"Not this stuff."
"I wouldn't eat this stuff," she said bitterly.
Nanny's face fell.
"But you cook it," she pointed out. "Only 'cause I'm told to. The old baron knew what good food was. This stuff eats nothing but pork and beef and lamb and rubbish for them that never tasted anything better.
The only things on four legs that's worth eating is alligator. I mean, real food.
Mrs. Pleasant looked around the kitchen.
Sarah, she shouted.
One of the sub-cooks turned round.
Yes'm?
Me and this lady is just going out. Just you see to everything, okay?
Yes'm.
Mrs. Pleasant stood up and nodded meaningfully at Nanny Ogg.
Walls have ears, she said.
Cough, do they?
We going to go for a little stroll,